You're listening to Raising Anchor, the Rhode Island FC podcast, now part of the Blazing Musket family. We're glad you're here. Hello and welcome to Raising Anchor, your podcast and source for all things Rhode Island FC. I'm your host, Matt Intrican, coming to you on this Thursday, April 3rd. RIFC gets shut down against Loudoun, leaving fans wondering if this was the worst performance in club history. We're going to pick apart why that might not be the case, and then get you ready for the team's longest journey ahead of this season, heading out to Oakland, to the Coliseum, and it's all happening this Saturday, to go over the ups, the downs, the Open Cup magic, here, the ride to my die, the die to my ride, the dynamite, Mr. Jason Carey. Jason, how is it going, my friend?
I'm doing great. You know, it's funny, I was thinking about how I always have a habit of, like, you know, bringing something quote-unquote negative to the start of the trip, but, you know, I think it, for me, it's more about celebrating their life and their influence. So, you know, RIP Val Kilmer, not the best Batman film, but it did bring a classic to us, Seal's Kiss by a Rose. And I'm going to just assume that that song would have never been released if it were not for that movie. So we'll forgive that movie for not being a great Batman.
You know, we'd have to sit down at one point and rank our Batmans in order. I don't think Val Kilmer's at the bottom, but I also don't think he's at the top. I always can get confused which one was the one with the nipple armor. That's I never remember which one it was. But you're right. Without that, we wouldn't have that, you know, that wonderful song, which now has become one of the greatest Super Bowl commercials of all time in addition to. So we're going to have to figure this out, Jason. You cannot keep starting our podcasts off with doom and gloom.
It's not doom. I'm celebrating.
It's the Irish in you. You're looking at this as a wake. I'm looking at this as a tragedy. I get you. I will ask you this, though. Val Kilmer, Batman, Seal, I get it. But what was your favorite Val Kilmer movie?
I mean, probably a random deep cut here, but Willow, come on, RIP Mad Mardigan.
It's not a bad cut. My favorite of all time is Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. A lot of people don't know about it, so this is your homework for the week. If you've never seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, go out and watch it. It stars Robert Downey Jr., and I honestly think it's kind of like a poke at his personal life. If you know anything about the guy, he is a criminal who just, like, stumbles into a Hollywood audition. And then they love him because it's, you know, method acting, because he's playing a criminal in the audition tape. And then things unfold, and Val Kilmer, it's easily one of his most dynamic roles of his entire range that he ever played. So if you haven't ever seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, highly recommend it. It's a gem of a film. But we are not a Val Kilmer, hashtag not a Val Kilmer movie podcast. So let's get into this. Kind of bouncing all around tonight. It's gonna be a fun show for sure. Let's start off with just some quick housekeeping. Another schedule update this week. First, it was New Mexico United last week, changing their schedule around. Our game got moved from a Saturday, the final game of the season, now down to a Friday. North Carolina FC now following in their footsteps here, and weirdly enough, it's the game right before our final game, and so it kind of leaves me questioning some things here. Like, what's going on in the back half of the season here for these teams?
They're trying to throw us off. They realized, you know, RAFC are a late season team. They're like, we don't want to deal with that smoke. What if we just move their game, you know, get them off kilter a bit?
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I was actually looking into some stats. I was trying to, like, go for those, like, weird baseball mechanic stats, and I did notice that I think there's a stat out there. So for anyone that wants to get ahead of the curve on this, I am very curious, and I'm pulling the data, but I haven't cleaned it all up yet. What our stats look like in games under 60 degrees in temperature? I think we actually perform really terribly when we're not getting those 70 plus games. I don't know if that's like cold legs, cold minds, you know, freezing on the pitch, so to speak, but there's something there to it. And this is on the back half the other way now. Who knows? I don't know, but we were very much a second half season team last year. Hello to everyone that's in the chat. We see all of you. We've got Nateski, the great Nateski, Harry from San Antonio, starting to dread what San Antonio is doing in the West there. They're now the only team left technically with all wins. There are two teams that are undefeated still in the standings. Dribble Trips is here. Archie, the legend himself. He was talking earlier about the Open Cup and how to get up to Lewiston. William Lamb, the Sacramento. I mean, he's Sacramento, but he's roots. He's he's all of USL. There's no way to really, you know, qualify who he is on that one. So let's continue and let's keep going here. But please remember on the dates for that North Carolina game, it was originally on October 19th. The new date will now be October 18th. So it's moving up a day. If you had plans to go down to North Carolina, make sure that you have adjusted your travel plans. I don't think we have a really good travel game out. No one's really ever come up to me and said, North Carolina is the game I'm going to. So we'll see. We'll see how many fans get out there. But let's jump straight into this Open Cup. First and foremost, Hartford Athletic, you know, Shartford pathetic, as we like to call them in the Discord. What a great game. And not just the only game of the night that was fantastic. You had the Chattanooga Derby as well going on. Are we peaking in terms of Open Cup? Is this a direct sign? Like, did CBS strike while the lightning was hot and they're here now? Because this all seems to be going in favor of, we're not even to the MLS phase yet, and these have been some of the most fun soccer programmings that I've watched in a long time.
Yeah, I wonder, would some of it being, you know, when MLS was like, oh, we're too good for the Open Cup, all of a sudden there was kind of a, I want to say that no one watched it, but maybe there was a bit of a renewed interest in people saying, like, no, this kind of cup does matter. And so in that regard, it kind of pushed the narrative a bit more, people kind of really championing this cup, and maybe the sickos kind of getting out to the normies and being like, no, like, come over here, check out this nonsense. Like, I imagine this tournament's always been great. I don't think I've always casually followed it, but I don't, you know, not previously following the USL team, maybe didn't watch it as closely, because more often than not, MLS teams don't always take it seriously. It's more of an afterthought. It's a, like, if we can get one or two rounds playing our kids, then maybe we'll, like, okay, let's take this competition seriously.
Let's move the first team into the rotation.
Yeah, but to begin with, it's always like, throw out like 6 to 8 kids and we'll throw in a few starters there, maybe who need some minutes, and just kind of see what happens.
I mean, your burrito boys have now made it. They're now on to the next round as well. They're entering into round three where we are. For anyone going to Oakland this weekend, Farolito is in the Bay Area. Like, you need to go and stop and support your local burrito boys. Give them some love. Give them some attention there. Let's talk about how this all kind of shook out. Obviously, the Hartford game last night against the Hearts of Pine in Lewiston. Phenomenal game in terms of the high stakes, the last minute thriller, the fact that, you know, Hartford's still with an advantage in you know, 10 men down on Hearts of Pine side, with the fact that they were in command of the game and then couldn't take care of business and penalties. We've been there. I am not throwing any shade. I want to be really clear. This is not a slight on Hartford in the sense of that, because I don't want to put that bad vibe out there against us. I respect it. But not what Hartford probably thought on the night, and definitely just a Cinderella story and just everything you could ask for Hearts of Pine. They now are our round three opponent in Lewiston at 7 p.m. on April 15th, a Tuesday. A lot of people thought we'd have a better random draw when it came to how that would all shake out. But we've been telling people from the beginning that, one, we knew Rhode Island FC wasn't going to get a home bid in this first one. I know it was kind of back up in the air at the beginning. And then, two, they weren't going to be playing a USL championship side. We thought maybe there'd be a regional round robin to where, like, they would vote or they would randomly draw the opponents, similar to last year when we got Hartford and they said, no, you guys can't play each other. This one was all predetermined. They said that based on the geographical footprint, we were always naturally locked on to play the Hearts of Pine. How do you feel about this team being our opponent in the Open Cup? We'll get into it next week during the break, but, like, when you think about it, we've loved this team as they've grown. We've watched them develop. But now it's like the alliance has to be put on temporary pause and we have to get to business here.
Yeah, definitely. I think we've kind of supported them from afar in a sense of really liking what their community and what their kind of team has stood for and what they're building over there. But at the end of the day, you're always going to support your own club, obviously. So, you know, that should be a fun match. I think they seem like a great group of people over there. I guess when it comes to it being quote unquote predetermined that we are always going to play them, I do find it interesting in the sense of, you know, I like the regionalness to kind of cut down on travel, right? It can get expensive, but then you can also get into a situation where you could be playing the same teams too often, and that can kind of cheapen the kind of value of it. So I don't know, maybe some more of these USL teams start to come online. Maybe that kind of throws a few more teams in the mix and it's more likely to not always be consistent. And obviously, like, you have to get through, like, if they didn't make it through, well, then it, you know, would have been maybe Hartford. But if some of the same teams continue to get through and you don't have a little bit of randomness in there, you know, after playing the same team 4 or 5 times in a row, it can start to get a little tired.
Especially with the Jägermeister Cup now, it seems like that'll be a repeat a little later in the season. When we were looking at the potential opponents today, it was Loudon United, which we didn't want to face Loudon again right now, at least not right now. And then it was Hearts of Pine or Westchester. They all advanced in their respective tickets. So it was kind of like one of those things where, well, what do you do? So I agree there could be some formatting opportunity there. A really important note, though, on that, the next round should not be predetermined. Regional stances do go away into the round 4 opportunity. So everyone, I want Revs more than anything. We should get an automatic hosting berth as the 8 MLS teams enter if we win, but do not assume it's the Revs. Does U.S. Soccer and the U.S. Open Cup League committee want that game? 100%. I've seen it too many times with some of the other, you know, derbies and rivalries around the league that they just naturally happen to get selected against each other. But that being said, let's all first get through the game with Hearts of Pine. They are a serious team. You have to take them very serious. We had one good result against them. But then after that, they were draws. Like, this was not a team we could break down in the preseason. So this is something that we need to consider and make sure that, like, hey, as good as they are, we need to be better. And if this is the game where we get on, like, just kind of catch on fire, post-Oakland roots, whatever is the outcome of that, this game probably has the highest table stakes now in the first, you know, what, 6 games before Tidewater comes online.
Yeah, definitely. I think after last year's early exit against Charlotte Independence, I think fans will at least want to have a little bit stronger of a showing in the Open Cup.
Agreed. So let's move on into the other piece of news that did happen. So this was an interesting one. This one, I saw it for a second and then it disappeared, but I haven't heard a lot of people talking about it. Actually, I do want to go back real fast. If you need tickets for the Hearts of Pine game, if you are traveling, please hop into the Discord. The link is there. The link's been made available in several places to get your tickets. Get them now and then worry about your logistics. No one's really quite aware of how the capacity at this high school is going to look like. So if you're intending to go and you can make the trip on a weekday, buy the tickets tonight or when you listen to this, and then figure out your logistics afterwards. But moving into this next one here, like I said, I heard about this. I saw it. I saved it, and then it kind of disappeared. I couldn't really find it again without specifically key searching what was on this. But Rhode Island FC is actually partnering with Bally's and specifically the NRI Chamber to have this Rhode Island FC luncheon kickoff thing where basically for a set amount of money, you'll be able to have lunch with all of the players, all of the staff from Rhode Island FC at Bally's. I'm assuming it's the Twin Rivers location. I didn't even look before, and yeah, it's Twin Rivers on the listing here. But you'll get a photo with them. You'll also get a ticket to the game. I don't know which game they're specifying. There's going to be merchandise, raffles, and prizes. Haven't seen a lot of this. Don't know what the expectation is. Is this to draw like casuals? Is this to get, you know, $60 from the soccer sickos and come out? Like, because I mean, like, the cool thing about the USL, right, is these players are completely approachable. Whether you randomly run into them at your favorite coffee shop or, you know, you see them after the game, I've never once heard of a player rebuking a fan or someone because, like, oh, I'm too important, I'm too professional. You know, I need my messy bodyguard to keep me from you and, you know,
he's
getting
not
to
even
me.
He's allowed on the sideline anymore, apparently.
I saw. Well, you almost got me there. Hashtag not an MLS podcast. But so if you're interested in this or you just want to be around the team in the presence of them, it is $60 a person, but it is going to NRI Chamber. So there's some, you know, there's some good causes to the development of probably Rhode Island FC to a certain extent. I'm sure they're getting a little bit of that, but also the betterment of the community. So something to think about there. And, you know, if you want lunch with JJ Williams, you know, Amos Shapira Thompson, you don't want lunch with him, I can tell you.
Sleeper hit there, yeah.
No, you don't want it because he's got so many dietary restrictions. Like, oh, you don't want to eat with Amos Shapira Thompson. Noah Fusan, you might not want to eat with him too. He eats so clean that I think, like, you may not want to have food with them, but everyone else,
I mean, you could just hang out for the vibes.
Oh yeah,
you know?
No. Talk with them, yeah, but you don't want what they're having. Like, if they say, hey, like, here you go, I'm order my plate, get the AST special, you don't want the AST special unless that's what your jam is. Yeah, so that's the news. You ready to jump into this? Do you even want to jump into this Loudon recap? Should we pull a Colos Biggs final and just go straight into the Oakland Roots preview?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, you want to skip that? We'll just, this will be the shortest podcast in the history.
What game you're talking about?
Perfect. I love when you get selective memory. So let's get into this. RFC fell to Loudoun United over the weekend, 2-0. They're now off to their worst season in club history, now with just 1 point across their first three games, winless in all three, technically winless in four games. It's the largest drought that they've had in goal production. It's the largest drought that they've had in wins for a very long time, going back all the way to April of last season. So much so, their goal drought, Jason, right now, no club in the championship has scored less times or failed to score less times. And that includes Hartford, which surprised me at first because I was like, well, Hartford only has one goal in their goal column. The own goal, which we've talked about at length, does not count for their goal production. It only counts against their total stat line. So when it comes to individual contribution, the way like the stats are generated, they are, there's no team that is worse than them, which is a problem. That means we're tied in the basement with Hartford Athletic right now, even though we're in 10th place in the East. How do you feel about that? What's going through your mind as we start to unpack this game?
I mean, you know, that's not a great stat, not something you want to be associated with, and not something I would have kind of thought that this team would be struggling with. The game as a whole, you know, wasn't realistically a great game. I was kind of expecting a tough match, you know, one that only masochists could appreciate, especially
the nil-nil draw.
Yeah. You know, especially considering like what happened last season. So, but it kind of panned out worse than I thought it was going to be.
I will say this. We did the initial take during the Monday mailbag, and it was hard at the time to extract value. I think we talked about Marky Barra probably had a really good game considering the performance he was stuck with. You know, he definitely advocated for why he should be a starter on this team. But it was hard because it was, we didn't do any research. We didn't go back and watch that game again. So it was just kind of like how we felt coming out of a breakup. You know, you're just like, I don't want to talk about it yet. I'm still in the grieving period. There's a couple of strings I think we can pull apart, but let's break down the starting 11. Cause I think that's going to be a major component of really what we need to look forward to in the recap, but then also like, what is this team going to look like in the future? It was the 3-5-2. We had Koke Vegas in net. You had a back three inverted with Grant Stoman on the left. That was a departure from where we've seen him normally. Karifa Yao in the center, and then Frank Nodarse on the right side. Frank was such a utility player. Like, he really kind of morphed everywhere last year on the back line. But if Stoman was healthy, he was always on the right center back side. That midfield five, you saw Aldair Sanchez on the left wing. Taimu Okiyoshi kind of tucked into that left, you know, center midfielder role. And then you had Maxi Rodriguez up in the center, Clay Holstead at right wing back, and then Marky Barra in the center midfielder role. Interestingly enough, the striker pair up front, JJ Williams and Chico Noah Fusan, gets sidelined for the night. I want to start there. One, we're going to talk about this. Is this the best 11 that we have? Or two, is benching Noah Fusan something that we should see this early in the season? Like, was that the right play?
Yeah, Fusan did have a bit of a rough match against Phoenix. I think he kind of, playing on the right there, kind of struggled to create chances, and his crossing suffered a little bit. That being said, I think you want him on the field. So when we look at this lineup against Loudoun, you know, I don't think that is our best lineup. I mean, in terms of, like I just mentioned, chance creation there too, we had Quisera on the bench as well, but that was kind of expected. We've seen when he comes back from international travel, two games in Africa, that's a lot of travel. So it was kind of expected that we probably would only see a half from him. So to leave both of those players off, essentially like game-changing players, is not great. And by the time that they came on, like, the damage was already done at that point.
And I think that's important when we talk about the overall performance, because I do think that we started to see things kind of go right to a certain degree in the second half of the game. But I agree with you. And I want to just ask this question before we move on. what is the best starting 11 that we can field with no red cards, and we don't know what Rivera and Hugo can do yet. So with the players that we've seen, is this as close to the starting 11 that we should have, or are there still major questions that, like, it's hard to understand what's going through Coach Cano's mind?
I mean, it's close. I think there are some things that I would like to see changed. I think Stoneman tends to do better as a right center back, and I thought we saw, you know, that Nadarce really struggled this match. He did.
So did Stoneman, though.
Yeah, and I think that if we swapped them, I would like to have that kind of reversed. In the past, Nadarce has played. He's played on the right, and he's done well. And part of that was because we had I'm blanking. What's his name from Minnesota?
Morris Dugan.
Morris Dugan. So we had Morris Dugan, and you couldn't take him off that spot. So it made sense to shift him over to the right. And then Stoneman's always, throughout the season, been in and out a little bit with maybe age and some like niggling injuries that kind of kept him out of the side. So that made sense. But before, Nadarce had done pretty well there on the left. And I think that he could maybe help, because Sanchez had a poor game here too. I don't think he was very effective compared to the last game. And like, when you look at his positioning.
Well, let's not jump ahead, because we have a whole thing on Sanchez and Taimu in a second. So bury that for a second. Let's not get too far in. Specifically to Nadarce and Stoneman, I want to talk about it. Let's go right into the fact that, you know, we were asking ourselves multiple times this week, was it the defense? Was it the back three specifically, who have been shaky to borderline irresponsible this entire season so far, and have contributed to most of the negative success that this club has been experiencing as of late? Or was this a product of Abdellatif Aboukura just having worldly performances on his two of three chances that I think he had three shots on target for the night. He converts to one of them. I absolutely think there's very few players in the USL championship that could even do what he did. The first one may have been a lapse in defensive judgment, and again, just, you know, reaction to what you're supposed to do when those things happen. You know, both these goals come, an assist from Skundrić and then, of course, an assist from Velo within 5 minutes of each other. So, like, you know, you take away that 5 minute window. Is it the talent that Loudon had? I think Aboukura is now the golden boot as of right now. Or you look at the history now of this team over three games over this period of time. Like, what's the problem here? Is it one versus the other? Or, like, where are we at on that?
I think it's a little bit of both there. I think clearly he is a great player. You know, he wouldn't be the golden boot leader right now without kind of having that talent, and especially considering they didn't create a lot of clear-cut chances. The XG for both teams was pretty low in this game, about 0.58
for Loudon, yeah, 0.55 for Rhode Island.
So,
which is expected of a normal nil-nil draw performance. Like, that is,
yeah.
For, and you know, we have the stats on the screen now. It's pretty even keel. Like, this is exact. This had the potential to be the three-peat of the 0-0 draw king special. It just, in that 1 5-minute window, it didn't happen. So I want to, like, let's get specific here. Is this a failure of the defense, or is this just the worldly talent, the otherworldly talent of Aboukura on the night?
I mean, our defense failed, and he capitalized on those chances, right? So that first one was a bad giveaway in our third of the field. You know, Stoneman makes a pass out to Ibarra. The pass has a little bit too much weight on it, and Ibarra has to run onto it and rather than receive it to his feet.
Should Ibarra just have tried to take the chance and step into it? And even if it was, you know, deflected back, or who knows where the ball would have gone, I feel like he was only one. I think he did the right thing, knowing how much weight was behind it, not realizing it was going right to Aboukura. But, you know, hindsight's 20/20, we get the benefit of it. If he had just taken the step in, not knowing where the ball would have spilled out to, could he have put a foot on that ball?
Potentially. I mean, you know, like you said, hindsight's 20/20. Maybe he just wasn't aware of, like, at the time, kind of his surroundings, and didn't realize there was a Loudon player right there to just kind of pick up that wayward pass. And sometimes you also just don't think that it's, you know, one misplay is going to kind of punish you that much. Especially while they weren't super close to goal, there was a little bit of room there for them to kind of figure it out. And then on top of that, the problem is that Nodarsay, like I said, who's been in bad form, to me, like, his body language there looks a bit lackadaisical in trying to cover that distance. Obviously, Yao is closer, but that's never been Yao's, like, game per se. Out of the three defenders, he was the best on the night, but he's always, like, he's found his role in the team, and he's never been the one who's necessarily going to chase after the guy running and, like, shut it down.
No, he's the brick wall.
He's the brick wall. He makes the interception. He makes the tackle. But when it comes to players coming at him in speed, it's always been the other two center backs, like, job to kind of, like, close down that gap, force them to make a difficult shot, maybe force them to go wide. And they kind of just weren't doing that because the other goal came on the other side. And, I mean, granted, at this time...
That time it was directly to... Well, they had 40 flipped, though.
They had flipped. And so, yeah, just getting punished for, you know, poor defending there, I'd say. But at the same time, you have to give Abukara his credit because, I mean,
yeah,
that was a great goal, the second one. Like you said, I don't think that many players in the league could have scored that.
I don't think anyone other than maybe Noah, and if it was on the other side, could have pulled that off. Just because the technical ability, the maintaining his momentum through it, and then one touch curl, that goal deserves more credit, but it won't get it because when we think about goals of the year, it's always like who fired one out from, you know, 30
yards away.
Yeah. So let's talk about these stats, though. We have them up on the screen. You know, I want to call out a few things here. One, we've mentioned the defense, but I think we also need to talk about the offense here. RAFC failed to register a shot in the final 30 minutes of this game. You know, 5 shots, 2 on target. Do you know who the 2 were from?
That I don't remember.
Maxi Rodriguez. So all four, if you want to count Quisera as, you know, someone who would be getting involved in the attack, kind of all quiet on the night. That being said, I think that we still played the similar tactic of what we want to see this team become when they're doing it well, which is controlling the midfield, you know, edging out the opponent when it comes to which side of the final third has more possession. We definitely did that in the second half where we went from like 24% possession in Loudon's final third to like 30 in the second half. So we started doing those things, but then we just kind of got back in our way again in that 5-minute period, specifically in the final half of the first half. I guess you could say the 15 minutes if you want. We basically just repeated what we did in Phoenix, right? We blundered defensively. We got punished for it. And then we couldn't figure out how to reconnect the offense to the midfield. In the Monday mailbag, we talked about how this team, with this high press, they seem to either be numbers too far committed forward in the press attempt, or they've taken the ball with possession and then, like, they get an interception, a block, a tackle, whatever. Ball comes back the other way, and we don't have the presence in the midfield. And I don't know if that's a Maxi Rodriguez thing yet, but, like, we suddenly only have Taimu and Mark, in this case, trying to, like, help corral and steer the ball out to the wings. Not a lot of central play, so that's what worked a lot for the night for both teams. But even without that central vertical back and forth, we only had 2 players in the midfield. We were playing a 4-2-4 a lot of the time. And then when we were stacking bodies defensively. We couldn't get the numbers to break out in the midfield to connect to a forward to try to, like, do something. If it wasn't the long ball from Koke to Williams again, we didn't really have an answer for moving the ball quickly up the field. I don't know if it was the players that we had available to us. I don't know if it was the tactic. I don't know what it was, but it's not working right now.
And I went back and rewatched a little bit of this game, you know, just to kind of maybe get a better idea of what some of it that went wrong. And to give Loudon their credit, they were very compact defensively and they were very organized. That being said, it was very clear that we were stretched either too far or too compact. Like you said, the front players were too far and there was basically a non-existent midfield where players were not coming back. And while the team ultimately did dominate possession, there was a lot of that mindless possession that we saw last year early on, where it was a lot of passes in the back. If you look at the passing matrix, there's too many passes that are just, you know, from Meow back to Stoneman and so on and so forth.
Yeah, the biggest combinations were all the back line. Yeah. Nothing moved forward.
And so you don't, that's not what we want to see, right? We're not threatening them by just moving the ball around the back. It's not doing anyone any good. And then when we did get it forward, it felt almost like they lost patience and didn't look for a good chance, and they just almost just forced it. I was like, well, we haven't been over here in a while, so let's just try something. They started to get desperate to a certain extent.
Four of the goals now against Rhode Island FC, like I said, have been converted in the final 15 minutes of the first half. What's not clicking for these guys to get through that first period or that first time, and then change or retool or do something different in the second half? It seems like it's becoming an Achilles heel for us.
Yeah, I think part of it's a mental thing, but at the same time, you know, we've talked about this lineup, and not to like make excuses for this team, but I don't think we're seeing the right lineup here. There's certain things like I kind of thought about and wanted to point out. One thing that made us so strong last year was our midfield, right? That trio of Ibarra, Clay Holstad, and Zach Herivo. And they were so good about like rotating, right? One would push up, they would kind of cycle and continue and cover for each other, and all of them could contribute into the attack in different ways. And so that's not to take away from Maxi Rodriguez. He is a phenomenal player, but he still has to kind of gel with the team. We haven't seen a lot of Clay in the midfield. He keeps kind of, you know, I'm not going to count right wing back, right midfield kind of position. That we're, I think, is a little too far out to do exactly what we want him to, because he's also kind of come back. He's better almost as like that free range midfielder, where he can read the game and press forward as we need to, drop back as he's got a little bit more freedom there. And then Ibarra there to kind of clean up after the other two. Herivo's been out with injury. We've pushed him into the back line. Like, we took apart that really strong midfield, and now we've put in Taimu Okeyoshi, who's, to his credit, has been good, but hasn't really shown us what more he can bring in terms of, like, we feel as if he is similar to Ibarra, and we've mentioned this a few times now, that he doesn't maybe have an added dimension to him that you would see with a Herivo, with a Rodriguez, or any of the other midfielders that we have who could kind of play in that position. It almost feels a little too defensive or passive to have him, because we just haven't seen him really drive the ball forward, and he drops back a lot and just kind of recycles possession with the back of the, you know, like our center backs.
Moving on, it's not been my words, but others have been saying this week, especially with a fully healthy Jackson Lee. People are starting to question, should Jackson Lee get the start? I personally don't see it. I don't even know why that conversation is even developing yet. The results may not be there in terms of total game performance, but Koke Vegas has been above average and consistent across all of the metrics that matter as a keeper when it comes to, you know, your time in the net. You know, before Loudon, he was averaging just two saves a game. Sure, that could be more, but his conversion rate on those was over 50%. So, like, he's not getting a lot of shots against him, and the ones that they are, like, he's mostly doing the work, and I don't think really there's anything to blame on that. But, you know, it's not just in what he's doing in front of that. His passing accuracy, above 80%. He's one of the best still in the league so far this season. His long accuracy is almost at 60%. He's been attempting a lot of long ball connections to JJ Williams. But where he really shines, his goal kick conversion right now. Do you have a guess? What would a good goalkeeper goal kick conversion be in your mind?
Probably somewhere north of 50%. I know a lot of them kind of get lost up there, especially if you're just punting them upfield.
So I would expect like 75 would be a good. He's at 92%. 92%. Where when he's in a static position, he's hitting his marker. Like, that's exactly what you want. His sweeper keeping is top in the league right now. And the whole action against, like, oh, he's a keeper that punches and he's a keeper that, you know, drops balls. His catch rate is over 60% on the shots that have been fired at him. So, like, there's no reason to drop El Capitan from this roster right now. I know that there's that fun thing of saying Jackson Lee saves that. I like Jackson Lee. Jackson Lee is probably
he's a great dude.
My second favorite player on the team. Like, I love his attitude. I love his like mentality. I love everything about the dude. I love his family. Like, they are just they are so, he is such a good dude. I cannot wait to see him like just kickstart his career once it comes time for him to leave Rhode Island FC. But like right now, he's either as good or he's slightly behind Koke. And we have to make sure that Koke feels supported in that. So I don't really understand the hate against Mr. Vegas, but it's there, and I will not stand for it.
Yeah, I think people are frustrated in trying to look for an answer, and you know we all at times get angry and think, oh, I could have stopped that shot. And like let's be honest with ourselves, we are not professional soccer players. And when we keep talking about the chop and change in the midfield and the back line, like there's definitely something broken in this team, and we're giving up, you know, chances against Koke. And like, you know, if we're just going to let Abakora just run through our midfield, well, you know, he's going to get a decent shot at goal. And sometimes there's nothing you can do about that. I think also some people still have a bit of a negative kind of view of that progressive goalkeeper, and they think just stay in your net, don't pass, and just punt it upfield. And I get it that is very you know a view on how maybe certain people think that the game should be played, but the reality is when Rhode Island FC is at their best, it's when Koke is able to, you know, be an extra like midfielder in a way, or like a center back there, and we are compressing teams. And he's that safety net where we can bring the ball back to him. He can spray it out to the wings. And like you said, with 92% accuracy there for kicks, like, you know, it's almost a sure thing that we're going to be able to keep possession there, suffocate our opponents, and kind of play the game the way we want to.
I mean, we know what's stifling Koke right now, and it's the back line, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, we know Frank didn't have a good game. We know Stoneman didn't have a good game. Hervo didn't have a good game either in his time. But, you know, at this point, what do you do with a back three that is struggling pretty holistically? Because even Yao has suffered in some of these games. Stoneman moving to the left didn't seem to fix anything. We don't have the depth right now to chop and change. So if you're Coach Kano and you've got three defenders that are all not doing what you need them to do, and you need to still play them next week, how do we expect change? How do we expect anything different? Because like you saw Fusan had a bad game and he rode Pine at the beginning of the next game. Like, coach is not afraid if he has the depth to say, hey, like, no one is above the crest. But right now, there's three players that, like, they can get away with a lot of things right now, and you're not playing Kevin Vang at right center back. I'm sorry, it's just not happening. So what do we do about it? What does Coach Kano need to do to motivate these guys?
I mean, it would be pretty brazen to maybe put Dewhurst out there. I don't know what his, you know, how ready he would be. I mean, maybe against Oakland might be the opponent you could get away with it. I did notice in the match Stoneman had that kind of that KT or athletic tape all wrapped around his knee. We know that he, you know, didn't start the season right away, so I almost wonder are we in such a bad spot where maybe he's not 100%?
I mean, I don't think he's been in 100% since he joined us.
And which isn't great, and so we're playing, you know, a partially broken Stoneman. We're playing an out of form, no Darcy, and then, you know, poor Yao in the middle is there just trying to hold it all down by himself.
it's I don't know, but like it's not great when, you know, we have all these other players that we just there's not a lot of options right now, so it's difficult to see, and it's just weird. This team, they didn't play a clean game all season last year, but they were better than this. So it's really hard to see them struggle through these points where they're just getting in their own way. You know, I asked you at the beginning of the week, was this the worst performance of all time? I said that I thought the Colo Spigs regular season game was the worst. You know, that was the match where, you know, we wanted to blame it on altitude.
We lost our heads.
Turnbull shoved Demus in the box. It just seemed like a game, you know, where we were looking to get out of there. Was this the worst game? I mean, it was easily the worst game of the season, but was this the worst game we've ever played as a club?
Definitely worst game of the season. I don't think there's any argument with that. I mean, I don't know, maybe the Charleston wasn't great either, but didn't have the same hit. But I don't know if I would say it's the worst match. It definitely was not a good performance. And speaking of which, we kind of maybe see differently in terms of how you would decide whether or not a game is the worst match.
Yeah, you're wrong and I'm right. Perfect.
You know, to each their own.
Fans, if you listen to the Monday Mailbag, feel free to leave a comment and let us know whose mentality on what constitutes a bad game is. We won't go over that tonight.
You're basically just saying that the journey doesn't matter.
I'm not at all.
All right, we won't get into this.
But
right now.
If you're saying this wasn't the worst match of all time, then what were the silver linings that you picked up? We couldn't do it at the time.
I don't think it has to have silver linings to mean that it's the worst match of all time. But we've already talked about how this was very close to being another 0-0 draw, which is a very boring match, but not necessarily the worst match. And part of that is just, you know, we have to give credit to Loudon that even if maybe this team was in a little better form, maybe 0-0 was the actual best like thing we could have asked for, or, you know, even a 1-1 draw where both teams kind of had one chance and took their opportunities. I think that you have to give Loudon the respect that they've showed this season. They're in second place right now. Granted, they tend to start seasons strong, so I don't know if that will continue. The championship can be a bit chaotic at times, but, you know, they were a good team. I think when it comes to worst performance, and I mean, maybe this is just me, the way I look at it, you know, we didn't have the best squad out there and we're out of a bit of a form. You know, like I think about, like you said, Colorado Spigs there when we went over there, lost our heads.
It's Colo Spigs or Colorado Springs. You can't do half and half. Can't do that.
Sorry, Colo Spigs. I love it. We keep using that. I don't know if that many people even know what it's in reference to.
Oh, well, maybe we should define it then. For anyone who's like, why can't they say the name? Like, we're, you know, not capable of doing it.
Driving down from Denver, there is a sign on the side of the road where...
It wasn't just one. It was all of their freeway signs.
Yeah, it's too long of a word. They shorten it, Colo Spigs, so...
Saves money on the paint that they have to do. Look, let's get into this. I want bringing back up the Sanchez part for a second there. I thought that, you know, I still can't qualify if this was just pure mistakes or if this was also, again, coach experimenting to a certain extent, that the team wasn't quite ready. You know, when you look at what they wanted to accomplish, you saw a lot of it start to take place in the second half. But you mentioned and you had touched on something about Aldair Sanchez. I feel like we majorly saw him drop off in this game, along with Taimu Okiyoshi. You know, we've been asking questions since the beginning of Taimu starting, like, why is he there versus Mark? This time around, we see him now start side by side with Mark. He only had 11 passes this game. All of his numbers were reduced in half. Same thing with Sanchez. They were both effectively removed off the board. If you look at the positioning on the screen, Taimu was playing a little bit further up, ranged farther than Mark. He was actually on par with Maxi Rodriguez. And then when you look at Aldair Sanchez, look how far up he was.
He's practically a winger at that point. And we've seen at times Quisera will get away with that. But the problem is that he can bring that threat that forces their opponent back because they have to be like, oh, I can't let that guy get the ball. Aldair was in this match a little bit, you know, and part of this maybe is showing his youth in terms of gelling with the squad. There are times when I went back and was rewatching some of the match and he was so far up, he was like an attacker. And there are other times when we're all the way up and he's running from the back. And it's like, where
were you? That 4-2-4 problem, right.
Yeah. So there's definitely a disconnect there in terms of positioning. We also got attacked on that our left side there because they would
40% of the time.
Yeah, they were just throwing balls over there and just burning us because they would get in behind him. So it was definitely an issue there.
And what I'm not sure of, just to cut you off though, is I'm not sure if that's a tactic that we like. Did coach say, "I want to put you that far up. You are the surrogate Quisera for the night." You know, I haven't seen Aldair's game and taking on dribbles. We mentioned this last week in Phoenix. He was really good about going to the defender, creating space, and then firing crosses. He didn't get those opportunities on the night because he never made it. He never got the ball enough times to get up there and be that successful. Time moves so far out. If you also look, Grant Stoneman was tucked in centrally on top of Khalifa Yao at times. I don't remember a lot of the ball going through the left. When I watched it again at like times two, we kind of like abandoned the left flank a lot of the time. You know, there was a favorability for Holstead back to Maxi, and we were staying on that right side. I don't know if that's because of the way Loudon was stacked, like you just mentioned. I'm curious, and it's going to take a couple more games to figure this out, if that was a tactic employed by Smith and we failed all the year in Taimu, or if this is just like you said, it's now starting to show like their total dimension that they can offer to the game. And if things get around them or if things change, they can't adapt yet in this system. They're either, they don't have the skill set or they don't understand the dynamic and the chemistry. But this was the first glimpse where we saw a negative performance that I can't necessarily blame on the player just yet. I think it may have come down to tactics. On the other hand, when you look at the momentum of this game, talk about, we always like to say tale of two halves, but like we were basically in control in the second half of this game. Like we had the lion's share of the possession. We knew what we wanted to do with it. We brought in Herivo, we brought in Fusan, we brought in Quizeras, we brought in, you know, the quote unquote A-listers. We started controlling the dynamic, but was that a product of RFC executing their plan? Or was that Loudon going, we have two goals. Do what you want to do. Like you have to come to us. Now they didn't park the bus by any means, but they didn't nearly try as hard. Like they returned to the mean of what Loudon kind of is.
Yeah, but also in the second half, we saw multiple changes from Connell Smith there. So we saw some of our quote unquote starters come in that you would have expected to play. Like when we saw Aldair Sanchez, I don't think any of us expected him to be a starter. Same thing with Taimu Okiyoshi. And then just due to the availability of players in this squad, they've kind of both been thrust into starter roles. And, you know, maybe to a certain extent, maybe we, you know, have to give Kano some slack there. Maybe he's doing the best he can with the players that are available to him. You know, I mean, it's still too early in the season, I think, for us to be really, you know, questioning him that much. I think obviously
the questions will continue until improvement occurs.
You know, obviously we've, you know, come off last season with high expectations, seeing what this team can do. At a certain point, obviously, we're going to have to want more from it. But right now, I think that maybe we want to just give him a little bit of time to sort it out.
Agreed. Moving on to the final piece, the attack. So we've talked about the midfield. We've talked about the back line. This was not a good game. You mentioned the XG 0.5, total shots 5-2. We already talked about Maxi. I guess I want to ask, you know, looking at this from the standpoint of Chico completely MIA, 3 of 11 passes, which passes, again, I don't ever hold on a forward if they're trying to drive the ball vertically towards net. Williams completely off, removed from the game. Fusan and Quizera, when they came in as part of the attacking contribution, no contribution whatsoever, no touches in the box. I think, well, actually, no, they didn't even get in Loudon's box. Like, so no final touches in Loudon's box. Is this a symptom, like, should we start sounding the alarm bells now, or is this a symptom of bad defense, disconnected midfield, don't blame the offense just yet, or did they need to find a way to get into this game?
I mean, you know, we can definitely question the attack and kind of hope and expect more from them, but I think when you, like, look at the quote-unquote tire fire that is kind of maybe going on behind them, it's hard to really blame them. Obviously, you know, when you score goals, you can kind of fix those problems, right? If we would have just randomly scored two goals, we'd be like, ah, you know, whatever. We got out of there alive. But the problem is chance creation. And, you know, only world-class strikers can really create their own chances. You know, with only 5 shots in the entire game, like, we just weren't getting the ball to these guys to really make attempts on net. There are times when I would see, in the rewatch, Rodriguez was dropping really deep to try and receive the ball and move it forward. There was too much passing between the back. We really couldn't penetrate through Loudon's low block, which is really, you know, tough to break down for certain teams. Our pass accuracy was pretty low this match too. I don't think Chico's 8 missed pass killed it. It's kind of an overall, like, you go and look down at the team, you're like, we didn't do so well here. It's only 75% for the match. And you know, there were times last year where we were hovering around that accurate passes completion FC team kind of thing. So, kind of really disappointing to see that we can't put something together to get strikers who we know can score goals opportunities. Because I think if we could have created some more chances and we brought them on with Quisera and Fusson, but maybe somehow the midfield and defenders just couldn't get the ball to them.
It's a problem that we're going to have to continue to examine. There's worries there. I mean, we thought we would be talking about which two strikers would be up front between Fusson, Chico, and Williams. But right now, you know, it doesn't seem like any of them have quote-unquote locked on. I think Williams has the biggest lead, not just because of the goal, but because of some of the other stats that have supported it. But it is definitely, there's a drought going on up front. But we got to move on. Let's talk about the red cards. Both teams get a red card in this game. Want to first ask you, did we need to do more to capitalize on Learman's red with Loudon? Ironically, it reminds me of the game against Oakland where we were kind of in a similar situation, much different stats, much different dynamic to that game. But like, is it implied, you know, when you get that kind of advantage with, what, 30 minutes to go, do you need to do more with it? Or is that not necessarily the case, especially when the team is up, you know, two goals?
Yeah, I definitely would have expected a little more from them here. RFC's actual last shot of the match came about a minute before Learman was sent off. So that's really disappointing that they couldn't even kind of get any attempts off. And you would expect Loudon to kind of lock it down. But Loudon actually managed three shot attempts after being down a man. And so when I went back and rewatched some of that, the actual next 10 minutes after, it does kind of actually swing a bit in Loudon's favor there. They actually continuously kind of press the narrative before RFC wrestles it and kind of controls it there for the last 20 minutes or so. So that you know, like we just mentioned, there's some sort of disconnect between the back of the team to getting it to our forwards. I don't know exactly what those answers are. We've talked about some kind of issues here in terms of, well, maybe our best midfielders are not playing. You know, I think there's still an elephant in the room that we've brought up a few times in one Stephen Turnbull.
The curse is real.
Who I think brought a lot more to this team than maybe we realized when we lost him. I think he was a bit of a rock on that right side. He would kind of lock it down. He was up and down the field. So yeah, there's definitely some questions here that Kano's going to have to sort out.
Speaking of questions, probably the most puzzling thing of the night. And, you know, one of the reasons I mentioned Kolo Spiggs earlier was because of the Stephen Turnbull red card, right? Like it was just, or not, he wasn't a red card. Sorry, he should have gotten a red in my opinion because he was already on a yellow for that before the foul. But, you know, just throwing away the game, getting a silly mistake where you start to see those performance dips and you go, okay, has this team checked out? I know that when you are a defender, you're not taking all of the stats or all of the details into your mind. Like you can sometimes get like that tunnel vision of I need to stop this person no matter what. But there's two talking points, I think, in the Zach Herivo red. One, was that foul a textbook dog so by the definition? Because it looked like Stoneman was a leg and a half up on Leggett. That's a pun almost in and of itself. And, you know, when you think about, you know, Leggett's definitely faster than Stoneman. And so when you take it at freeze frame, it is what it is. But at speed, you know Leggett might have burned past. Now, he still has to dribble that ball, so there's a bit of a disadvantage there. But is that actually dog so? And then two, it's the 94th minute. You're down by two. I'm not saying give up because you never want to see a player just like break down. Like, I can't do anything, so I'm not going to try. But running down a guy on a risky challenge with a minute to go in the game, you're in extra time or you're in added time. Is that arguably worse that we now don't have Herivo available for Oakland?
Yeah, I think it was kind of unnecessary there. I understand that, you know, goal difference can matter. But at the end of the day, it's just one. If we lost by three, is it any real difference? Because it's not like there was plenty of time in the match to kind of turn it around. The match was practically over at that point. I think you do your best to try and keep up with him and try and force him wide to maybe take a more difficult shot. If he's faster than you at the end of the day, I mean, unless this is what Kano's instructions are to, you know, like to take him out. But at that point, it was kind of a dumb decision from Zach there.
Something that may have ramifications because we won't have one of our best players for a team that we should arguably beat. We're going to get into this Oakland preview, but before we do, if you're Coach Cano, you're now winless in 3, 2 losses, a worse record than you started last season. The direction's going the wrong way. What do you do if you're Coach Cano Smith?
Maybe he needs to go full Ferguson and give them the hairdryer treatment. I don't know if that will, you know, how effective that will be, but he needs to kind of give them some sort of kick in the butt to kind of get this team going, because we saw what they can do last year. And a lot of these are the same players. It's not like the entire squad has been changed. So in that regards, you would expect even our defenders, right? Grant Stoneman was kind of in and out of the team there. my choice of words tripped me up there, you know. And
granted,
he was part of that back line, right? So you look at Nodarce, Yao, and Stoneman there, you would think that, okay, that is a serviceable back line. Maybe they're not going to beat everyone in terms of pace, but we shouldn't be giving up the chances that we are right now.
Agreed. I think there's lots of questions. We heard from Tom Quinlan this week that in his interview with Mark Ibarra, they had a players meeting after the game. It may have been something similar to what they had experienced in Memphis. I think it's a little early to do probably that one, because that was where, you know, you're halfway through the season. Things are not clicking. You know, this is 3 games in. But the fact that they're aware of it and they're trying to address it internally, that speaks volumes. You know, there's a lot of leaders on this team.
Yeah.
So, but whether or not that'll pull off for this team is what we're going to need to now talk about. You know, this is going to be, I feel like this is like a battle of the losers to a certain extent right now. Rhode Island FC now sits in 10th place in the Eastern Conference on a 0-1-2 record. They're tied for second to last place in goals scored with just 2. And again, that's if you count that own goal, which, you know, when you look at what Hartford's produced, they are lower. But is that the saving grace, or do we need not to begin comparing ourselves to what Hartford does? Because I feel like the second we start going, oh, well, we're better than Hartford, we might as well throw the season away. We can't do that, nor should we, because there's a reason teams like Hartford, there's a reason teams like Miami are in the basement. We need to get as far away from these teams as possible. Similar to the West right now, Oakland is on a trajectory very similar. They're now at dead last with 1 point themselves after a showing of 4 games, so they have 1 game ahead of us. They're currently the second worst defensive team in the league right now after allowing 9 goals into their net. But you know what the worst team is, Jason? Well, that would be Phoenix Rising, and we all know how that worked out for us the prior week. This is going to be, I mean, this is a tale, like, we'll talk about this, but this game should be winnable, right?
Absolutely. But with the form that we're in, it's almost, you know, we could find a way to mess it up.
Granted, there's a lot of things going on here, but if you're in such bad form, do you want to play another team with bad form to get fresh breath, to get the confidence back? Or would you like go, hey, I'd rather have this team when we're in form and we get a guaranteed 3 points?
I mean, I think you could look at it from a perspective of, you know, instill that confidence in yourself, remind yourself of what this team accomplished and who you are, and say, you know what, we're not playing great right now, but we are a better team than them. And if we can go out there and beat them, you can kind of regain and build that confidence back.
That's fair. In head-to-head, there's only been, of course, 1 match between these 2 sides, the infamous 1-1 draw in the last showdown at Burn. It ended in a disappointment. You know, I feel like fans, I think we felt that way too, that this game should have been a win with all 3 points. But, you know, we missed 3 big chances on the night, a failed attempt after capitalizing on the 10-man Oakland squad after Neville Hackshaw was sent off in the 72nd minute. The team did really 61% possession for the team. We just couldn't get it done in the full 90, dropping those 2 points. It was a match that I think everyone expected, and maybe it did hurt us because we did not get 4th place and get a home berth later. Probably one of the few teams, or a few games, I should say, where we could have helped our standings. It just didn't happen.
Yeah, I kind of forgot how one-sided this match was.
Look at the XG alone, 1.95 to 0.6. Like, it 21 shots total against 7 for Oakland. Like, this was a very lopsided match, and just remembering that it was a 1-1 it shouldn't feel that way.
Yeah, and this was another, like you said, one of those frustrating matches where you look at the amount of shots we had, the XG we created, there should have been at least one more goal. But then you remember there was kind of a different reason, I think, that this was really frustrating, and it was your arch nemesis, Paul Blanchett. He kind of trolled RIFC the whole match. it took him till what was it, like the 80th minute when he finally got a yellow card for time wasting?
Yeah, after the defiance had counted to 20 seconds on five different goal kick occasions.
Yeah, he was just taking his time for every goal kick, like right off the bat. And it just felt like they were playing for a draw from the beginning of the match. They're like, if we can just frustrate them, break them from their game, kind of break their spirits, don't ever allow them to have the ball by constantly just, you know, letting the goalie have it.
I would not expect these stats to remain the same. You know, this Oakland team is off to a rough start this season, having lost in front of a USL record attendance, losing a lead against a team, then dropping all 3 points against a 10-man Monterey, and letting three goals in unanswered until the 60th minute in their season opener against Orange County. We knew this team was going to struggle in the preseason when we learned that Johnny Rodriguez was very late to transfer on what we've been told is a pretty big internal transfer deal between Oakland Roots and Las Vegas Lights. They didn't really have an answer on replacing Johnny Rodriguez at the time, but they also lost other players like MLS veterans Dom Dwyer, Memo Rodriguez. They lost Roots legend Rafael Baca, I should say, and of course, Paul Blanchett. They did lose 10 total players, but they gained 10 new players in the form of Kai Green, Tyler Gibson, EJ Johnson, and some others that we're going to highlight here in a second. I think that we thought that this Roots team was going to suffer offensively. I don't think that we thought that they would suffer defensively. It turns out it's both. They're now second to last in total ratings in the league. They're 23rd in goals conceded. They're deep in the pack for most of the offensive metrics, from shots on target at 22nd, the chances created at 20th, accurate crosses at 18th, touches in the opposition's box at 21st. Their best stats that they lead in any indicator across the league right now: penalties earned, penalties awarded to the other team, and yellow cards accumulated. It's not looking good for the Oakland Roots at this time.
Yeah, those are some interesting stats there. I mean, positives for them: the Oakland Athletics kind of jersey they got, those look really nice.
I don't think they've had a single miss since we've been paying attention in the league. I feel like the Roots always show up for their kits. And you know, when you have a kit and our team doesn't, like, you already automatically win by default.
I mean, that was really awesome. The 26,000 they showed up in that first match, but a sharp decline kind of following that. That kind of maybe has some questions. It's not always as easy as saying just be successful on the pitch. I wonder if maybe if they're, did they go all out in terms of advertising to pack that first match? That remains to be seen. But I did watch the match against Las Vegas for this team, and they were, it was a very boring match, 0-0. But they were kind of chaotic in the back. And when they eventually figured out a way to get the ball forward, there's definitely some athleticism in that attack there. So at some point, maybe if they figure it out, they could potentially be a dangerous team.
Just not against us.
You know, hopefully they don't figure it out against us. But I do worry that maybe that athleticism could trouble our broken and beat down back line. So,
I mean, tactically wise, to your point with the athleticism, they primarily play in a 4-2-3-1. They're mainly creating, you know, link-ups and combinations in the midfield. They love to invert their left wing back a little higher, whether he's a winger or a left back. It kind of depends on whether it's Ramusen or Engie. I think it'll be Engie for this particular game because he seems to be in the best run of form. And after, even though it was a 0-0, when you have defenders that can keep a clean sheet, like, you usually keep them on for the next game. They love playing without the ball and prefer the counter, especially with that speed and that athleticism so far. They have natural wingers. They're probably going to want to stretch this field. The Coliseum, it's going to be one of the biggest pitches you know, that you can get in terms of size and dimension. I don't know where it stacks, but like, when you have the space, take it. The one thing that I want to kind of comment, like, we've been giving up goals in the first half in the last 15 minutes. The Roots right now are very much a second half team, whether that's for them or against them. They've scored 4 goals of their 6 total in the season so far in the second half, but they've also allowed 6 to get by them after the 45th minute. So they had one chance where they scored in the 6th minute, but primarily they're a team that activates in that second half. So expect to see something to that. And if, you know, Rhode Island FC doesn't have the endurance and the stamina to to hold off against that athleticism. It may punish this team in that second half. What do we got for the referee assignments?
Yeah, so the head ref here is going to be Servando Berna. AR1 is going to be Cameron Seiler. AR2, Ryan Jung. And the fourth official will be Conrado Garcia. Berna was the fourth official for the Roots season opener against Orange County SC, but hasn't been the main person in charge since last season. He's officially officiated 7 championship matches, issuing 31 yellow cards and averaging 4.4 yellows per game. This season, across all competitions, he's now issued a red card in back-to-back games.
You know what that means. Third time's the charm. If it ain't broke, J.J. Williams' words. In terms of the availability report, as we know it, Isaac Anking, Hugo Bacharach, and Danny Rivera all still out on injuries. I haven't heard Danny's timeline or progress yet, so I still don't think we'll see him just yet. Zach Harava, who I reported is not available or at least injured last week and then he played, I didn't see the guy play, so that I stand by that decision. But he definitely will not be playing this week as he's now on disciplinary suspension for red card, earning the first red card of the Rhode Island FC season. I wonder who will get the first yellow card accumulated. It'll be Clay, right? It always has to be Clay. And then in terms of players that we know won't be playing in Oakland or for Oakland, the only one we thought for sure that could be questionable was Camden Riley. He did come out with an injury. We haven't seen him, you know, back in since. So it didn't seem in any of the practice photos that I could at least find for Oakland, as you know, we try to spy on these teams, which is unfortunate. You know, he was a beloved San Diego Loyal ginger. He can play the back line. He can play the midfield. He was pretty good for them last season. He would have been a player I thought would have been great for Rhode Island FC, but didn't really happen.
Yeah, definitely a talented player who's maybe fallen into the wrong team there.
Yeah, and he's more than welcome to come to the Ocean State anytime he wants. All right, Jason, this one's you this week. I disagreed, but you know, you let me put my line out last time, so this is all you.
All right, so we're looking for maybe a little bit of movement around here. Koke Vegas still in net. Grant Stoneman back as a right center back. Karifa Yao in the middle as usual. Frank Nodarse back out on that left center back. With Jojea Quizera coming back in, we think he'll probably move to the right. That way we can have Aldair Sanchez out as a left wing back. Then in the middle there, we're looking to get Clay Holstad and Mark Ibarra, with Maxi Rodriguez kind of sitting right there in front of him behind J.J. Williams and Noah Fuson, with a bench of Chico, Taimu Okiyoshi, Amos Shapiro-Thompson, Joe Brito, Kevin Vang, Cole Dewhurst, and Jackson Lee.
Okay, let's get through the pain points here. First off, why Fuson, not Chico?
I just think maybe to change it up a little bit. I don't think that Chico has been playing bad in any way, shape, or form. But I also don't think that you can take off Maxi. I mean, potentially you could move Fuson out as a left wing back, and then you could put Chico up top and then maybe use Aldair as a sub. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that either. But I also think that Aldair has shown us what he can do. And I think as we continue to struggle with our wing backs here, I think you want to try and get him into form. And I don't think you want to punish him and just say, like, you had such a bad game, I'm not going to play you anymore. He's still young, and I think he can still be an integral part of this team. So I personally would like to see him get some more minutes.
Even though we've not seen Quizera do well in the first sample size?
Yeah, but, like, who else would you
put Stephen Turnbull.
Just reactivate his claws. Apparently, he was sitting on the bench for Birmingham Legion recently.
I think he may have picked up a knock. I don't think it was a performance issue, so I think he may have been on the mend. There's no reason that Turnbull doesn't play. He's too good of a player. I don't think you're wrong. I would want those players. The only argument would be if you had Chico firing on all cylinders. You know, I would try Fuson again on the right wing back side. I know it didn't work out well for him either, but then at least you're getting Quizera and his natural space. The beauty of it is we haven't seen any of these things work so far, right? Like, there's still some chances here. What I do love the most, though, and this would be if this is what happens on the night, if this formation gets picked, the best part of it is that we will finally see Ibarra, Holstad, and Rodriguez in the center midfield trio. We have not yet seen that for the start of a game where they get to kind of dictate terms before something goes off the rails. So that would be exciting if that happens. I think that Mark has definitely proven his case to edge out Taimu. A couple of people, when we did the Wrong Wednesday, I finally did one on Instagram, got a couple of questions from the Taimu love crew. They were not having it with him not on the start.
I'm happy to have him as the squad. I just don't know if he is the best option right now as a starter.
Agreed. I think we need to, at this point, start getting points. We need to start getting results. So I agree with this. Moving into the Oakland Roots side, like we said, Coach Gavin Glint likes a 4-2-3-1 right now. It looks like it'll most likely be Kendall McIntosh in net, despite the fact that he's let a lot of goals in already this season. Abdi Muhammad will be on that right wing back or right fullback side. Kai Green and Neville Hackshack, our favorite red card extraordinaire, will be in that center back line. And Babakur Nienji will be on that left back side. Double pivot in the middle. You've got Daniel Gomez and newcomer Tyler Gibson. They haven't looked bad, but they haven't been controlling as much of the ball vertically as I think they'd like. And then you've got Luis Sinistra on that right wing. He's a forward by trade, newcomer to the squad. You've got Panos Armenakos. I can't talk tonight. Armenakos. You've got him.
Armenakos, I think.
Is it Armenakos?
All right. I struggle with the first name, but yeah, Armenakos.
Armenakos. Okay, so it's been a rough day. Armenakos, he is, for all intent, their kind of golden child of signings. It's not a Johnny Rodriguez one-to-one replacement. He came in free agency into the team this year. We're going to talk about him here in a second, but he is their playmaker. He is their chance creator, and a lot of responsibility is now on this number 10. Wolfgang Prentice, he is someone who has been kind of on loan and through their academy system. He's been with the Roots for a long time in his tenure, but he's not really played with them. He's always been out playing with other teams. And then Peter Wilson is their lone striker up front. He is the Johnny Rodriguez, you know, substitute right now, and we'll talk about him in a second. This isn't the same team that we saw, with the exception of Hackshaw, NG, and I think that's it. I think every single one of these other players... Maybe Gomez was in the team last season, but he didn't start for, didn't play in that game.
Riley would count if he was not, you know, injured.
Right. So this is not the same Oakland Roots that we said earlier with those stat lines. It's going to be interesting. You know, we talked about player profiles to talk about. Which one did you like to talk about?
Yeah, and so Armenakis here, 26-year-old Australian, has been a standout for the Oakland Roots, even though it's been a bit of a rough start of the season for them. Playing primarily as a number 10 in their 4-2-3-1 system. They picked him up as a free agent, like you said, and his positional awareness and the quality of the game, the ability for him to roam there in that system. He loves to move around the pitch, find space, and kind of play, you know, line-breaking passes there in order to progress the attack forward. He's specifically great in counterattack situation as he progresses the ball quickly with high quality from one side of the pitch to the other. Do not let his one assist and no goals this season fool you. He is a danger to any team that Oakland plays, as he ranks in the top 25% of chance creators this season and in the top 10 for pass accuracy amongst other attacking midfielders. He was on that Phoenix team that won a few years ago. I mean, he is a dangerous player, so you don't want to sleep on him.
I wonder if Jackson Lee and him ever played in... Like, I know he was on the U-17 for Australia. I wonder if they ever... like played in academies or anything like that together. My pick was, I wanted to go with Neville Hackshaw, the soccer player that built like a freight train. There's only one other player I've ever seen built like him, and he reminds me of Jozy Altidore, just dominating in size. You know, you'll remember him as the defender that was causing nothing but terror on our back line last year, just locking down JJ and providing a lot of the physicality to Oakland's game. Obviously, he earned a well deserved red card because of it last season, but it created a lot of problems for Rhode Island FC. He was probably the only problem creator for that team. He's a veteran of the USL. I didn't realize how much time he spent inside the championship. He most recently spent four seasons with Indy 11, and then 3 seasons before that with Charleston Battery. So not only has he played a lot of seasons and over 150 appearances, but he's played with some quality teams. You know, he hasn't been bouncing around like the bottom feeders of the league. If you know, the ones that would get relegated in the future state of the state. He's not someone to easily get passed by. He reminds me very much of like the profile of Karifa Yao. He's got a 65% plus win rate when it comes to his duels. He's averaging over 6 recoveries in the league, which per 90 puts him in the top 3% of defender actions in the league. So he is a big man on campus. And as long as he can keep himself out of some trouble on this game, he should be one of the main threats to Rhode Island FC's attack.
Yeah, and then another one we got here, Peter Wilson. One of the biggest questions will remain on who will fill for the absence of Johnny Rodriguez. And that's in head coach Gavin Glinton's taking a chance on a relatively unknown forward from Liberia. Coming off an impressive 2.5 years with Jerve in Norway's second division, where he scored 23 goals in 32 appearances. Jerve lost in the final game of the promotion playoff to advance back to the first division, and the Roots grabbed Wilson in free agency. It's too early to identify if Wilson will be able to translate similar success to the championship, but he's already put in a goal contribution in the bank with an assist in his first two starts. Can he fill Rodriguez's shoes? I think that remains to be seen. But the sale came so late in the preseason that he maybe hasn't had a lot of time with the team yet. So I imagine Oakland might be doing some shopping in the summer transfer window, especially after this kind of rough start here, unless things turn around.
Yeah, it'll be, you know, I mean, if Wilson can put up a fraction of the numbers that he put up in Norway, and I don't know the competitive level of second division Norwegian football, but it'll be interesting nevertheless. And then my final pick was Kendall McIntosh. You know, he probably wants a little bit happier of a successful storyline right now. But the reason I brought him up is he is an Oakland native coming up through the academy systems within the town itself. The 31-year-old has struggled so far this season, like we said earlier. 9 goals have now gotten past him in the first 3 matches. He only has 8 saves in that same span of time. He's a product of the Portland Timbers system before going on and getting some of his most professional minutes with Sporting Kansas City. Didn't work out there. I think he only played like maybe 18 games total in the MLS before he headed down to San Antonio last season. Obviously, San Antonio now amazing, but very much a dumpster fire last season. Now with the Roots, though, he's averaging 2.3 goals against or allowed, if I should say it the right way. So he's not exactly putting up good numbers just yet this season. However, if McIntosh, you know, can find his groove, and it looks like maybe, you know, a 0-0, if you're looking for the silver lining, like your keeper kept the team in, the defense kept the team in, this could be a sign of, you know, better things ahead for Oakland Roots as they turn the corner. He's demonstrated a lot of athleticism. His ability to parry shots and crosses and get them out of, like, you know, dangerous goal scoring opportunities is pretty solid. But unfortunately, when he taps them out or away, like, they can also get redistributed back into the net. Feels very akin to like what Rhode Island FC experienced in the Charleston game. Like, it's just like maybe the defense wasn't ready for what McIntosh could do, and so now they're learning. They're all learning together as a group. I think the big thing, though, is going to be, you know, he's a player that, you know, when you play FIFA, loving to hold triangle and bring the keeper out, he loves to range off his back line. When I saw the data come in, I was like, no, that's not a thing. Like, he's not quite a sweeper keeper. He just, when danger comes, he goes to it. And so that can hurt keepers that are not veterans or not seasoned in the ways of other teams. So that may be an interesting storyline on the night itself. Before we get into the final part here, I want to talk about two players on the Rhode Island FC side. Fusan's got to get back into the starting 11. He's got to start doing what he wants to do. You've got him as the starter over Chico. How important is this game for him to get not just a positive mob rating, but also get a goal or an assist? Like, are we at the point like this could hurt the rest of his season if he doesn't start getting something under himself?
Yeah, we talked about it last week that he consistently performs at a high level, and that's not always necessarily getting a goal or assist, even though he did put up pretty good numbers and was the golden playmaker last season. He needs to have a good game. He needs to be impactful. He needs to be threatening. And even if it's not creating that chance, it's the secondary assist, right? Seeing someone else in a good position who can maybe make a better pass than him. He needs to be threatening, and he needs to be giving that Oakland backline nightmares.
And then the other one, of course, the return of Frank Tank. We need him back now more than ever. I think when he drops off, we see the worst performances possible. He's now had 3 really bad games. What does it take to get him out of the funk that he's in, and how do we get back? Who was arguably, outside of Morris Dugan last year, our best defender?
Yeah, I don't know, maybe he's in his own head or something. When I went back and watched some of the match It looked maybe like some body language there is off. I don't know if he needs to sort something out, or, you know, I don't know if maybe something's going on that in his life that he needs to find a way to be able to kind of manage in terms of putting on a performance that we know that he can show. He was, when you look at the stats for this last game, I know he only played half of the match, but he's basically invisible. It's as if he wasn't even on the match. I think he had like one key stat and everything else was just blank. It's as if he wasn't there. And we're going to continue to suffer if our back line can't kind of get back into shape, especially with no reinforcements right now.
I know you don't know who Trey Turner is, so I won't waste your time with a baseball player. But Trey Turner was going through a lot of funk last year in the city and that he was a part of. And at first, they were just admonishing him. They were very upset, yelling at him, booing him. And then someone was like, we're gonna just celebrate you. We're going to give you nothing but positivity and appreciate you. And Trey Turner went on to have the best season of his entire career and helped the Phillies get to a place that that they needed to get to. I feel so, like,
sending good vibes Frank Nodarce's way.
I think Defiant 1636 needs to give Frank Nodarce the Trey Turner approach and slide into his DMs and send him a message of love immediately. And I encourage every person to go and harass Frank Nodarce and give him positive encouragement and love. And if any of you are in sliding into these players' DMs and giving them hate, how dare you? Okay, how dare you? Maybe you're the reason why Frank Nodarce is off his game. All right, let's get into the final parts here. You know, storylines to talk about. What does Rhode Island FC need to do to get points on this? I want to talk first about, this is the Coliseum. This is the big time. They are not going to get 26,000 people for this game, but it should be at least north of 7,000. This is one of the most historic rust buckets that exist. It's still an honor to play in. It should be exciting. Does the stadium have any impact on players at this regard, or is it just another place to play?
I think it can. I think there can be a bit of, nostalgia or something when you think about the people who have played in that match, and maybe you can kind of get the jitters. That being said, I don't know if that translates one-to-one with this not being a quote-unquote historic soccer stadium, if you will. Like, you can kind of be honored and think about, you know, like legends of the game who have played here for another sport. But ultimately, you know, I don't know if, like, have there been a lot of, like, World Cup or qualifying matches to played there or...
No, I think the only thing you get there is a tetanus shot.
So
I just think of, like, I think of the Revs, right? You know, it's a stadium that can hold 70,000 and there's going to be 7,000 in it. Does that give you... You know, when it's 26,000 and you've got the first two bowls filled, okay, we're talking. But 7,000, they can get up to 15. Maybe they'll get 15. I don't know. I don't know what the chances are for this game. It's not like we can know ahead of time. But, like, does that give you kind of like an advantage? Like, oh, you can't even fill your stadium. We got Tidewater back home, which, looking at the SeatGeek resale, I think the game sold out. The club just isn't announcing it yet. But it looks sold out for all intent and purpose. Like, we're 10,000 strong. Like, people like, we have a responsibility to these people. For Oakland, it's like they maybe don't. So, like, I feel like it gives you a competitive advantage when you don't fill your stadium. Like, that's why Birmingham did as bad as they did. That's why they continue to do as bad as they do.
I think it doesn't help, right? And I think, if anything, that more affects the home team, right? When Oakland goes out there and they see this massive stadium and they see it mostly empty, that's probably never a good feeling from the player's perspective. You know, you'd rather see a...
I wouldn't know.
You'd rather see... I'd imagine you'd rather see a smaller stadium that's packed.
Okay. So. RFC, this will be the longest trip for them this season going out. I didn't check the miles, but it's like a gajillion. does that have any bearing on this team? They go East Coast to West Coast, longest travel. There's probably five, you know, layovers they had to deal with, you know. It's a 1 p.m. Pacific time, so it's a 4 p.m. time for them. Any reason that this game has an impact for the players?
I wouldn't be too concerned about this. That at this point, they should already be used to the traveling that they're putting in. I mean, maybe towards the end, it can get maybe a little bit of a slog, but you'll know that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. So I wouldn't be too concerned about that. And I think the time of day is a little bit better here. I know that the one against Phoenix was 10 p.m. local time. So, you know, towards the end of the match, you wonder if, like, was it past their bedtime? Or they get tired there? But this one kind of middle of the day, I think it, you know, potentially, hopefully temperature-wise, it should be a little bit nicer out there. And you'd question maybe how well does this team perform in regards to temperature? Maybe if we get some better temps out there, do we see the team start to heat up?
Oakland has now let in 9 goals across 4 games. Rhode Island FC 6 across 3. This is a case of bad defense versus bad defense. Does that make this game the potential to be a high-scoring thriller, or does this do the opposite and we could see a 0-0 performance because neither team wants to have it be a problem with it's their defense that lets in the goals?
You could see kind of an overcorrection from both teams, but I trust...
Is that what Rhode Island FC needs to do right now?
I mean, I think a clean sheet would be really good for their mentality. But at the end of the day, I think they kind of need the win more. So it's that balance in the same regards of how we keep talking about how they somehow become a 4-2-4 or something. Like, you need to kind of adjust there more. You need more strength in midfield, but then you also need to know when to get back and not leave yourself vulnerable to the counter.
Armanakis is still trying to figure out his space and as his role as the 10 in this team. Likewise, we have Maxi Rodriguez trying to figure out his identity as the 10 in this team. We've seen problems in the midfield, but we know we have a great midfield. This midfield is either relatively new or they don't have the veterans because they're injured. Will this game be decided then by the midfield, or will it be decided by the defense, the goalkeeper, or the offense? If you had to pick one element of the game.
I think the game could be won in the midfield. I think in terms of the defense, it can only be lost at that point.
Okay. And then you kind of said it a second ago, Rhode Island FC needs this win. Is this game truly winnable, or are all bets off on the season and prove me wrong when you can actually do it?
I think if we, considering like they've let in 9 goals already, I think if RAFC lose this game, I know we're trying to be positive here. And
don't
give
come
them,
back.
Gives them some kind
Go
of...
Go straight to Maine.
give them some grace when it comes to the struggles that they're going through in terms of player availability, and then also all these road games that they have to go through. But I think if they can't, if they lose this game, that's really bad look. And I think that a lot more questions are going to have to be asked. If they get a draw, I think it will be frustrating, but it'll be, you know, maybe back to the norm, you know, as long as the performance is at least there. You know, we got a lot of draws last season where we felt like we should have won. If it's one of those games, I can at least say, well, maybe this is just a bit of entropy. The Galaxy just not letting us kind of, you know, get that goal we need to win. I think if they get the win, though, they can hopefully turn that into some momentum and kind of carry that into the rest of this away trip. Because they're going to need to pick it up if they want to have a favorable result. Because San Antonio is looking like the real deal. And the form that this team is in right now, that won't be a particularly great home opener unless, you know, the crowd can literally be the 12th man and kind of overpower San Antonio there.
The argument then, though, on Oakland's side, when we ask, like, which team needs this result more, Oakland would then have a third game in front of the crowd as they're trying to build this new fan base that shows that this club really can't get it done in the Coliseum. We're given the permission right now, or the excuse that we have all these away games. So like anything that happens out of it, you know, might happen, right? Like Andrew Hill, our quant projected 10 points. And I said that out loud. And now I wish I hadn't, because there's no way we're getting 10 points in this away leg that we're on. Do we need it as much? Or do we, you said, I agree with you. Momentum wise, like it's important to be into form for the Open Cup game, to make a strong attempt in the Jägermeister Cup round one, and then be prepared for Tidewater's opening day. That being said, though, like I'm not at a point yet to write this team off for
absolutely dropping
points anywhere in the 6-game road leg. So does Oakland then need it more, though, right now? They haven't given their fans a win at home in the Coliseum yet?
I mean, you know, there's always going to be, granted in soccer, there are ties.
They're called draws, Jason. I expect you to know better. Yeah, gosh, aren't you a soccer snob?
Same thing. I mean, then why are we calling it soccer? Why is it not football? there are winners and losers. Admittedly, I don't know a lot about, like, you know, I haven't dug too deep into Oakland in terms of like what their ownership goals are and all that, and in terms of like what their stadium options look like long term, because this is not where they should be. So I don't know if I'd argue they quote unquote need it more. I think that with the amount of change that they've done, if anything, they have more of an opportunity to kind of figure it out a little longer term.
What does Rhode Island FC need to get right for this game? You know, if you had to sum it up in 1 minute or less, what does Coach Connor need to implement to get this game going?
I think they need to sort out the defense. The defense needs to be stronger, and they need to move the ball quicker into the midfield so the midfield can get the ball into the attack, or at least kind of start to press and suffocate defenses the way that we've seen this team be successful. If they continue to be sloppy in the back, the opponent will start to kind of build in confidence and realize there's an opportunity there. And, you know, we could give up more chances and look at another kind of, you know, sloppy game.
I agree. I think the battle will be decided in the midfield. I think they have to start finding the chemistry, especially with Maxi Rodriguez, to connect the front to that midfield. If we see the lineup that we projected, I think that will help starting to solidify the central spine, which gives us the opportunity to play to the wings, but we don't have to overload the sides like we've been doing lately. We can use those wings, whether it's Fusan, Quisera, Sanchez, whatever, to stretch the team. And we know that Oakland will want to play wide as well. So they have their wingers. So I expect this game to be decided in the central midfield. If we play our best starting midfield that we possibly can and activate them, I think that's going to be the key to us doing something special. And then one of our strikers needs to find the back of the net. We cannot go, you know, nil-nil. I have a tie. I'll just say it right now. I have a 2-2 draw projected for this, but we need two goals from two different strikers or one striker. But like, they can't come from Frank Nodarce. They can't come from some freak Koke Vegas kicking with the wind at his back and, you know, getting a golazo from
direct free kick from
Vegas. We can't have that. Like, our strikers need to find form, and we need to find a way for our core spine of our midfield to activate. I think we'll be just fine. And, you know, this keeper has shown nine can get past, so take shots, lots of shots. Like, wherever you get the ball, don't pass it a third time, final time. Don't try to walk it in. Take your shots and then see what happens on the collection or the spill out and see what you can do from there. I said 2-2 was my draw prediction. The projections say 41% believe Oakland Roots will win. Only 4% will believe that it is a draw. And 54% think Rhode Island FC will get the win. I'm in the 4%, you know, atheist agnostic column here. What do you got?
I'm going for a 2-1 win. I think that our defense will be better, but we'll still be a little suspect. I think we'll still give up one goal. But I think that, you know, Oakland's in a worse spot than we are. And I think that this team has the ability to capitalize on that and get the W.
We shall see. The Hillside writes in, it's going to be a 3-2 result. We stake an early lead and then let them back in for some squeaky bum time. But RFC holds on for the first win of 2025. That's a man who said 10 points earlier. So anything is possible. Up could be down. I just hope it's a good game and not a game where by the 35th minute we're holding our heads in our hands and, you know, asking why. oh God, why? So that's it for tonight's show. As a reminder, Rhode Island FC heads to the Coliseum this Saturday, April 5th at 4 p.m. You can watch all the action on ESPN Plus or 790 The Score, or combine them if you're watching it from home. But you shouldn't be watching from home, because Defiant 1636 will be at the Guild in Pawtucket. Jason, any final thoughts, any final words?
Hope to at least be entertained out there this coming weekend. I guess that's all I can ask for, right?
It's all we can ever ask for in this life.
All right, everyone. Make sure to check out our friends over at the Blazing Musket for all of your New England soccer coverage, including RMC, and that's at theblazingmusket.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Threads, TikTok, and Blue Sky at RAFC Podcast. Got an Instagram at Raising Anchor, and then there's that website, RaisingAnchorPodcast.com. Anchor's up, buddy.
Anchor's up. Let's get something out there. I'm tired of seeing these winless runs. We got to win.